I'm Faith Middleton, and this show is about the richness of life. We're going to have an idea, a great idea think tank. Thank you for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. It's an exciting world to be in right now, from what the internet has provided to medical advances and the way our novelists continue to expand the way we think and feel about our own lives and those around us. Our novelists are among the greatest inventors on earth. We invite you to tell us what invention captivates you, what great idea in any arena, past, present, or what's coming. For example, I read 5 years ago in the book Technology's Promise, written by a futurist, that companies are already, this is in the pipeline, working on paper computers. By that, I mean, I'm holding in my hand a piece of blank 9x12 white paper. This piece of paper will be a computer. And you fold it and stick it in your pocket, or you pull it out and unfold it and start working. A keyboard will appear, and off you go. Now, that is a great idea. I don't know which companies, I can't remember at the moment, which ones are invested in this, but big, big money invested in this. That's an example of what's coming next. And we're asking you, what great idea in any field interests you? 203-776-WNPR. Call and tell us. And what do you want to see someone invent? What's a great idea you wish someone would act on? I'm still enthusiastic about the personal jetpack. You know, you strap it on and fly off. That never seems to materialize. I don't know why, considering the advances we have. All right, here is a great idea. And you might have seen a little bit about this posted on WNPR's e-newsletter that you can sign up to receive. Somebody smart put together two things: kids who are hungry in our midst, and kids who might be enriched by books. So hungry kids all around us are out of school with no access to their subsidized meals. And people have put this together, free lunch at several Hartford public libraries. How smart is that? Feed the belly and the mind. We're going to get a few words about this from Lucy Nolan, who is director of End Hunger Connecticut. Lucy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
So as you could hear, great ideas. Tell me, where did this idea come from to put those two things together, free lunch or subsidized lunch at public libraries?
Well, it's not only at public libraries. There are, in Connecticut alone, 413 sites where kids, open sites where any kid 18 or under can go and get a free meal, either breakfast, a snack, lunch, or a snack. Only 18 of those are actually libraries, so we'd like to see more, but we have them in the schools, we have them in parks, they're at community centers and churches, YMCAs, anywhere where kids congregate, and there has to be it's a certain population, low-income population. It's a census. They do it through census data. But it came together. It's a federal program called the Summer Meal Feeding Program, and it is been since the 70s. We've had it, and it's actually not used as much as we'd like it to be used.
Well,
it's only about 25% of the kids who are get meals mm-hmm. at school are getting it.
Well, Lucy, this part about the libraries, though, I mean, I'm so happy to hear about these meals and all these venues, but this thing about putting together libraries and, books and food for kids is just brilliant to me. Was that always part of the plan when they first started this, or did somebody recently decide to try that?
It's some libraries we've been doing. We've worked with a site in Putnam that has been in the library for at least 6 years, if not longer. It's just what towns, where they want to put them. And you're mm-hmm. right, because what happens, especially what happened in Hartford, we were there on Friday, all the kids stay afterwards, and they have activities, they have some reading, the kids were there playing on the computers. They really... You know, what it does is it helps enrich their minds while they feed their bellies, you know. So it really is a twofer. There's no question about it.
I love that you're doing this. And it sounds like it's starting to help. But I'm intrigued to hear that you need more kids to know about this, more families.
Yeah, it's really, we're Connecticut's fourth in the nation for the number of kids who participate. However, we're only reaching about 25% of those who get free reduced price meals during the school year.
Why?
It's just people just don't know about it. And so we've really worked hard this year, and I thank you for having me on today to let people know about the program. We've done a series of blitzes, which is another great idea that we did. We worked with over 300 volunteers for a week in June to get the word out in 10 different communities in the state. We passed over 200,000 pieces of paper and magnets and bookmarks and all sorts of things with our website and our a telephone number that kids or families can text. Another great idea that you put in your zip code and it tells you where the closest summer meal sites are to you. It's a mapping
so,
feature.
So let us help you further. Is there a site that people should go to if they hear this and think, I know how this could be useful? What's the site?
Sure, it's ctmeals.org. ctsummermeals.org or ctsummerfood.org, and people can text 877-877 and text CT Meals, and then it asks for your zip code.
And if you missed all that, we have that on our website right now.
Yeah.
Just go to WNPR.org and you'll see that listed. Just search the Faith Middleton Show. Lucy Nolan, thank you so much for being on the show and for your work.
Oh, thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome. Thanks. Lucy Nolan and Hunger Connecticut. That is a great idea, putting together libraries. And I'm so thrilled to hear that that's grown and what happened just this past Friday. Here's another idea. And if there's something in life that you see or you wish would happen in terms of great ideas you'd like to recognize, please call and tell us, 203-776-WNPR. Kind of think tank on this show about things in our midst. I can look around this room right now and look and see so many things. I'm looking at a computer screen. I'm looking at a light bulb that's on, air conditioning that's in this room, how we construct this building, the fact that we are joining you on air and online and this show can be heard all over the world. These are just remarkable things. You want to talk about great ideas. And when you start to go into every arena, imagine science and art and culture and music and on it goes. Here is something that there's been a change at the National Institute of Health, NIH, in Washington, D.C., that affects so many people. What do you hear about this idea? We have on the line Dr. Carolyn Missouri, who has an endowed chair at Yale, where she directs women's health research at Yale. Carolyn Missouri, welcome to the show. Welcome back, I should say.
Hi, Faith. It's great to be on the show with you.
So tell me what NIH has done with regard to women.
So we have in front of us really a marvelous idea that's emerging and is going to be implemented by the National Institutes of Health very soon. And that new idea is to finally require the inclusion of female animals and female cells in basic science research, which has never been required previously.
And the point is that women don't necessarily have the same response to treatments or the same signs of disease that men do, yet all the models for recognizing or treating are done on male animals.
Well, you probably well know, and we've talked about this before on the show, that it wasn't until the mid-1990s that the National Institutes of Health, which, by the way, is the single largest funder of biomedical research in the world. So it not only initiates a lot of studies, but it also sets the benchmark for studies, the standard for different types of studies and how we do health studies. When they made that change in the mid-1990s, we started to then, in a systematic way, include women in clinical trials where you test different medicines or devices or interventions to try to make people better. But at that time, that change only referred to human studies and not to other basic biological studies that, as you're suggesting, really lay the foundation for understanding what's really wrong or right in the biology. And so now, finally, after we've been doing this, by the way, at Yale and in our program, we've been funding studies in this regard, we've been looking at basic biology in terms of male and female typing. And so the NIH in May has finally announced that they are going to embrace this and require that anyone applying for federal funding through the NIH will also have to now start to study female animals as well as male animals. And that's really a very exciting and big new idea.
Oh, I love that. Thank you so much. Carolyn Missouri, Director of Women's Health Research at Yale, where she holds an endowed chair. Thank you so much for being back on the show.
My pleasure. Bye.
Good news. Bye-bye, Carolyn. Good news in that regard. So we're sitting around talking, and we're asking you, too, if you are looking around at your world and you've noticed things that you think are represent a good idea or ideas, please call and tell us at 203-776-WNPR. It's a chance to recognize them, to celebrate them, to get us to think about how that might lead also to other things. Is there something that you would like to see invented? So I'm sitting around and I say, when I invent or win $250 million, I've decided one of the things I would like to do with a chunk of that money is to set up training in the emotions for children. And my idea would be that if you got kids, pre-K through, say, high school, that you would be able to it changed the lives of so many people. If you got kids to understand how they feel, how their own emotions work, and how to recognize how other people's emotions work, this is what I was going to do with a big chunk of this money. Well, my friend Amy Gross sends me, within minutes of hearing that, sends me a link to a program. I might be mispronouncing this, CASEL. CASEL is a kind of foundation that has been formed. They use a program, so this thing already exists. It's very exciting news to me. SEL, Social and Emotional Learning, and it is set up for pre-K to grade 12. So if you are a teacher and you are interested in having a program like this in your school, perhaps you have it already. But if you don't, if you're a parent who's interested in knowing or a funder who wants to get this going, you can go online to CASEL.org, CASEL.org, and see exactly how this program works, how they teach kids about emotions, emotional learning, a pre-K to grade 12. Now, talk about a fantastic idea, CASEL.org. We're going to take a short break. We'd like to hear from you. There's room for you on the phone to talk about a great idea, to salute it at 203-776-WNPR, and we'll be right back. I'm Faith Middleton, and we are celebrating great ideas on the show. 203-776-WNPR. Fun and interesting to hear about these so far, and now we look forward to yours too. 203-776-WNPR. Daniel, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
So my name is Danielle.
Danielle, sorry.
It's okay. I work at a private school for students with autism here in Wallingford. And I'm calling about your topic regarding social learning and making those emotional connections. And it's something that we do every day at our school.
And how does this work? How do you do it?
So when we intake our students, what we recognize, especially in the community of autism, is this great need for this foundational social connection about thinking about you, thinking about me, and how do they identify their own emotions as well as the emotions in others. Every day I start out my day with asking the students how they're feeling and why, and identifying how they think I'm feeling, how they think those around them are feeling, and relating that to the plan we can make for their day in terms of regulating their academic and their behavioral schedules.
And when these children with autism, how do they learn this? What is the capacity in their brains for learning this? It's in other words, it's not only teachable, it's learnable.
Right. And so what we use is a lot of visuals and a lot of characterizations. So one of the programs that we use, I heard you mentioning something called Cassell. There's other programs that we use by this wonderful woman named Michelle Garcia Winner. And she has a curriculum called, it's a social thinking curriculum. One of them is Super Flex, and it's these characters that we use to identify certain social and emotional glitches. So there's one called Rock Brain, and if you're getting stuck and inflexible, then, you know, Rock Brain came to give you a visit, and how can you be flexible enough to beat that character? And so we take it away from blaming them and making them feel like it's their fault, and we kind of put it into this whole visual characterized, what do we do when this person invades our brain?
Ah, that's interesting. Wow. And I gather, I've read lately, increasingly interested in different ways that people are finding to reach out to children with autism, and that these roots are different. You know, obviously all these kids are on a spectrum. And so lately I've been hearing about music a great deal, that it's been reaching some children with autism in ways that are quite surprising. Have you found that?
We do. We have a student in our school that has really taken up the guitar therapeutically. And it's so interesting because sometimes we see these students that don't have a lot of verbal language or ways to express themselves. But some reason with reading music and finding music to kind of have as that expressive outlet, it helps regulate that emotion and that need to express in a way that's much more suited for them, much more visual, and it tends to hit upon those parts of their brain that really, really encourage the kind of learning that they're more wired for.
That's great. Thank you so much, Danielle. Really appreciate your call.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Great ideas on the show, as you can hear. 203-776-WNPR. I was talking with a friend who said he's very interested in the smartwatch. And there are some out there right now from various companies. There's a rumor that Apple is going to produce one this fall. Who knows? And they're actually pretty primitive right now. Their systems are not functioning. These smartwatches, you know, we know about the Fit watches that can monitor all kinds of health things. But the smartwatch that people are waiting for is one where you can take phone calls, you can do your email, you mostly can listen to music on it. You can text on it, you know, so everybody's waiting for one that truly works. And we'll see how far away we are at this point. But there are some major investors thinking that this is one of the directions that everything's going to go. I find that fascinating because I and a lot of my friends are interested in devices getting larger. So we like phablets, that the merging of the phone and the tablet. And so we want to see more tablets be able to make phone calls just the way a small phone would do that. Here's somebody saying, no, we think it's going to go microscopic. It's going to be on your wrist, Dick Tracy style. So we'll see if both, there are going to be two channels in this direction or not. So celebrate great ideas on the show with us, 203-776-WNPR. Alice, hi, it's Faith Middleton. Go ahead.
Hi. I don't have specifically an idea
of how this would work, but I think of myself as a very spiritual person, not religious in any way. I've tried out a lot of religions, but I miss having a faith-based community. And one of the things that's common of all the religions I've tried is that, you know, the constructed God is male, and we don't know who God is, so, you know, we kind of create God in our own image. And I just think it would be great if there was some sort of faith community that celebrated things that were feminine and female and having to do with mothers and girls and things that are resonate with me. And I don't know of any widely available religion that does that, but it's something that I'm missing. I derive my comfort from things that are feminine, and I don't have a faith community that does that, and I don't even know of one.
Alice, I congratulate you for talking about this. I have so many friends who have said the exact same thing for me. Where is the presence of the female divine? Mm-hmm. I think that's what you're describing. And
exactly.
how personal and real that having that access to that would make a belief. So I bet I'm trying to say you're not alone. A lot of people feel this way.
It's funny because I feel like talking with you about it is kind of coming out of the closet a little bit. I'm heterosexual, but I feel like this is one of those things that I keep stuff down because it's not socially acceptable to talk about, especially when you come from a kind of background I do, where it's a very strict, kind of old-fashioned, traditional male God, male spiritual leaders, and that kind of thing. And I don't feel okay sharing it with many people.
Well, Alice,
glad to get it out there.
Yeah, Alice, let me tell you that I have run into a couple of faith leaders, you know, from different faiths, but traditional, you know, pastors, ministers, and I've shared this idea with a couple of them, what you're talking about, and both of them said to me, "Oh, in our discussions in our church, we only say when we refer to God, he or she. We always say he or she, for those who." So there are a lot of people like you, I think. Hey, thank you, Alice, for calling the show.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So here is a request for something that doesn't exist very much, at least. 203-776-WNPR. Russ, welcome to the show on Great Ideas.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's the first time I've called, so if I sound nervous, it's because I'm not used to being on the radio.
Well, you sound pretty terrific, as a matter of fact. So go ahead, Russ. It's just we're buddies talking together.
Okay, great. Well, have this idea with a friend. We're starting to implement it, and that's really a community health-based idea. It's a little bit different from what the other people have talked about. Mm-hmm. And what we're doing is taking shipping containers, like you see on the back of trucks, and repurposing them as micro-cardio centers to create gyms in disadvantaged neighborhoods on vacant lots or donated, you know, church parking lots, and create sort of a community center and, you know, kind of very high-end fit-out so that people who are living in the food desert, it's also an exercise desert, can have a place to go and work out with content that's streamed to the units that would be sort of culturally appropriate for the specific needs, almost block by block in a city as to who the community are, what the health needs are.
Russ, and this is so exciting, so exciting. How is this funded?
Well, that's the question. We have talked to people like the head of the Association for the YMCAs here in Connecticut. It could be a state-funded, community health-funded program. It could be I live in an affluent town here, and our Y just keeps on getting money from the state, and we don't need it. But 10 miles down the street in New Haven, there's no money, and they're crying for it.
So is this something you want to do or have already done?
What we're doing is we're creating commercial versions of this for the hotel industry. I work in the hotel industry, so we're creating fitness centers for select service hotels that don't have good gyms. And for everything we're doing on the commercial side, we're also trying to do a social impact. So the same types of gyms that we're putting together for Marriott's of the world and Hilton's and IHG's, we want to give to the less fortunate people or people who don't have the same access. And so we're funding it through, we're going to try to do a public-private partnership arrangement.
Yeah, I hear you. That's great. And you want to do this in shipping containers. So please send us a message on Facebook. Just search the Faith Middleton Show, and we'll be in contact with you, and we'll pass that information along on our website, okay?
Oh, great.
All right. Thank you, Russ. Great idea.
Okay.
Really appreciate that. 203-776-WNPR to celebrate a great idea you know about. Maybe this is something going on in your small company. Maybe you have a nonprofit and you've come up with an idea and you see it being useful already. Maybe there's something that you would like to see done. We are celebrating great ideas on this show. 203-776-WNPR. My friend Ash Feinstein in New York City says that he has seen a new machine at a gym, and it reads where a muscle is weak and needs strengthening. So this machine might analyze after a workout the muscles in your left arm and your right arm and say this quadrant is 20% weaker than the other quadrant. And so, in other words, the message is you need to do a little bit more work to bring these up to speed and to bring this arm up to speed. So I think that's pretty fascinating that we're starting to get into that kind of microanalysis in our gyms. 203-776-WNPR. Hi, Jeff. Welcome to our show on Great Ideas. Faith Middleton.
Hi, Faith. How are you?
I'm great. Great to have you with me. Go ahead.
Okay. A number of years ago, I was in England. And as you know, a lot of people in England ride their bicycles.
Yeah.
And something that I saw that really intrigued me was there was a guy that had a contraption on his back wheel. And I asked someone else about it. And the way I understand it worked was it was kind of like an oversized clock spring. And what it did was he had two gears on the bike that in one gear, when he would go down a hill, he'd click it into that gear. And the bicycle, the momentum of the bicycle, would wind up the clock spring. And then when he got to the bottom of the hill and he had to go up another hill, he put it into another gear, and the clock spring gave him a boost up that hill.
Really? And yeah. Was this something, this device, that was commercially available, or did it look like he had constructed this thing?
I've never heard or seen anything about it since then.
That's fascinating.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, that is really great. Somebody needs to invent this.
It's kind of the principle, in a way, is what hybrids use, that, you know, use the braking to generate the power for the battery.
Yeah, I see.
It's similar to that, but it's totally mechanical. There's nothing electronic going on at all. So I thought you might be interested in hearing about that.
I love that. Thank you.
I wish someone would pick up the idea and take it to fruition.
It's surprising. You know, we have to Google this and see if somebody has done this. Have you ever done that? Have you ever Googled
this? I haven't. You know, I never even thought about it till you had this show, and I went, boy, that's been lingering in my mind for so long.
We were doing one of these idea generation sessions, a bunch of friends, the other day, and we came up with something that we thought was just a winner, off the charts, and no one could possibly have done this. And we typed it, we Googled it, and within 10 seconds, we saw 20 different sites that where people were already doing this thing. It is, I mean, first of all, talk about a great idea that we can find out so quickly thanks to the internet. And but the fact that you haven't seen this anywhere is a lead to me that maybe this doesn't exist. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Good job. 203-776-9677. We're hearing a lot about this driverless car. I've seen this. I saw a reporter testing this on network television news. Not quite what you imagine, but we're seeing these cars able to parallel park themselves, to drive down the road, putting in a destination. There are some people who say this is going to be the future. I'm interested. This is one of those I'll believe it when I see it, where our roads are just filled with these cars. You know, will this, the prediction that this is going to eliminate accidents? I don't know. We'll see. 203-776-WNPR. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Do you have a great idea, or is this something you want to see invented?
Well, it's something, it's a little bit of both.
Okay.
So I wanted to mention the tiny house movement, which probably you've heard of and your listeners have heard of.
Yeah.
And
I'm a little obsessed with this, Sarah.
Yeah, you and me both. So the concept itself is not new, especially the idea of building a tiny house that is mobile on wheels. But what I really wanted to mention is particularly one specific person that I know of is doing a campaign to raise funds to make a tiny house so that she can reduce her carbon footprint but also conserve her resources so that she can offer her health services to disadvantaged communities, which she wouldn't be able to do if she had to charge, regular fees to keep up rent and things like that.
Oh, so she wants to take this little house on wheels into neighborhoods and offer health services. What kind of services?
Yeah, she's a doula and a Reiki practitioner and a health advocate and educator.
Uh-huh. Okay. So what is she learning about these micro houses that are mobile?
Well, I think there's a variety of things to learn about, but all in all, the people who seem to gravitate towards the community are people who are just really interested in downsizing and just getting back to the basics of what's necessary, trying to figure out different ways to be sustainable and realizing they just don't need so much space to live in.
There are so many companies now, so many architecture programs at colleges and universities where they are having the students build these and create these out of interesting materials. You can buy these now for I think around $30,000. It's an intriguing area. We saw some of this after Katrina really start to take off. So wish your friend well on this, and it's an interesting idea to take a mobile house through places, just like the those shipping containers using the same kind of thing. Thank you very much.
Exactly.
Sarah.
Thank you very
All right.
much.
Great ideas on the show. 203-776-9677 or WNPR. We are going to take another short break, and then I hope to hear from you again with your great idea of something you wish would be invented. I'm having a good time. I hope you are too. We'll be right back. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR. Join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. I want to thank you for listening, and thanks also to our talented team, producers Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol. We are celebrating great ideas on the show, ones that exist or ones you'd like to see put into action. You can call us at 203-776-WNPR. We're going to get to this thing called Love 2.0. If you're just joining us, we have heard about these micro houses on wheels. Someone wants to take one. She is a alternative health practitioner and wants to take it into neighborhoods in need and to use the micro house to avoid all the expenses and costs that would prevent her from doing something like this. Another man has called the show. He creates gymnasiums for hotels that don't have them. And his idea as a give back to communities is to use shipping containers where he would create these exercise gymnasiums, but also with the purpose of measuring health, and that these could be targeted to health concerns in specific neighborhoods. And so another great idea. We're going to be in touch with him in just a little bit about that. Somebody called and said that she desires hearing about a faith that celebrates the female divine. She doesn't know of one. I insist that she's not alone in that desire, but feels that she would be closer to something that has meaning in her spiritual life if she could find that. These are some of the great... We heard from this about this new program through End Hunger Connecticut, where they have started serving kids who are hungry, serving them meals at public libraries. There are, I think, about 17 of these libraries around the Hartford region. And lots of other sites, too, in YMCA and YWCAs. But this library connection where kids have access to books and at the same time get some food, whether it is lunch, breakfast, or a snack, is just brilliant. And they're doing that. They want to feed even more kids if they can do it. So we have at our website right now an address for that if you would like to support it in some way or tell somebody about it. That's the Faith Middleton Show at WNPR.org. Okay, Brad, welcome to the show on Great Ideas.
Hi, Faith. Can you hear me okay?
I can, Brad. Go ahead.
Well, one is maybe way off in the future, and another one is something I'm doing now. I don't understand why you can't harness wind from automobiles, because when you stick your hand out the window on the highway, it's very windy in order to generate electricity. So there's probably a reason, because we haven't seen it. But the second one...
Wait a minute. Before we get to the second one, that is so smart. I've never thought about this. You're talking about using this wind to power the engine in some way or to power something in that vehicle.
Right. To collect like a... Like a hot, it does to collect more... turn it into electricity that gets stored in a battery. It seems like a lot of wind going wasted when you think of wind turbine technology. I don't know if it means like a million tiny little windmills on your roof or something, but I think that would be cool. And then now that they're talking about cars being driven rather than driving, like braking themselves before accidents, it seems like on the highway system eventually it'll be more like ski lifts, where you'll just get your car onto the highway and in line, and it'll be escorted along. So without a lot of extra territory, and especially if these cars could end up floating, it sounds a little like the Jetsons, but why couldn't the U.S. highway system become a giant solar panel? And the cars move along, and the energy gets collected by the highway system and put on the general grid or powers the cars that are on the grid already. And I'll give you like 15 years to get that ready, but I think that would be the wave of long-distance driving in the future is traveling over sun-collecting solar panels somehow.
Brad, these ideas that you're coming up with are just terrific. I celebrate you. What field are you in?
Well, I'm a choreographer, so...
And do you spend a lot of time on the road thinking?
Yes, that's right. That's right. So here's one more, if you don't mind, that I have been doing. I've been bringing kids with teenagers, particularly with disabilities, into dance workshops with kids, typical kids, that are already enrolled in dance programs. And doing choreographic workshops, usually a series of 8 or 10 sessions, and then having a performance at the end. And the results are quite beautiful. And the kids with the disabilities, like autism or Downs or physical disabilities, end up in dance performance situations they might not have sought out themselves. And the kids that are in the dance schools, they report that they get to stop thinking about themselves so much, you know, because it's such a self and body oriented and somewhat pressurized environment to do well in ballet or modern dance choreography and so on. So this gives an alternative focus to the kids already taking dance classes and invites a whole new group in.
That is something, Brad. That is something. What company are you doing this with?
Well, I've been working for 6 years with the New Haven Ballet, and they actually have a nice video of it on their website. We call it Shared Ability Dance rather than Disability Dance or whatever. And I've put a few YouTube videos up under Shared Ability Dance, three words, that show performances of this work. And so the listener could go to YouTube and keyword charitability dance and see several examples of it happening locally here. The performances have either been at the Schubert or at the New Co-op High School recently.
Thank you very, very much for what you do. And your ideas are sensational. Thank you so much, Brad.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. All right, here's our number, 203-776-WNPR, and we are celebrating great ideas. We have Dan on the line. Go ahead, Dan.
Oh, hi. How are you?
Great, thanks. Good to have you on the show. Go ahead.
Yep. Just to add to what the previous caller was saying about that bicycle contraption.
Yeah.
I believe it actually is a product that is manufactured over in Europe called the Copenhagen wheel. I'm not sure of the exact mechanism used to store the energy, but I do believe that if you look it up in the internet, you will find links to the product website.
The Copenhagen wheel.
Yes.
Isn't that an amazing idea? It's just a mystery to me why that isn't everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, doesn't it? Are you a biker?
A little bit, yeah.
Doesn't that sound kind of great?
Oh, yeah. I mean, just that little boost when you went up the steep hill from just your own kinetic energy. It's a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
So if you're interested in looking it up, I believe that would be the... That would be the way to go.
All right. And thank you so much.
Yep,
thank you. Do we have that? Do we have that posted? Not yet. Okay. Jean, go ahead. Faith Middleton, welcome to the show.
Hello, Faith. Hi.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm calling about this is more of a concept, and it's a website. It's called StoryChip.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a way, turning history on its head instead of having history told by the erudite, the educated, it's told by everyday people, and it's a compilation of first-person archives of contemporary world history.
So if you were in World War II, you talk about what it was like for you.
Right, it's a fully searchable website, so it's not just a collection of oral histories. It's so that if you wanted to research Guadalcanal 1942, you could search that, and all the stories from all the different people who wrote about that would come up.
Are there some unusual ones that you've seen come in?
We've had a story about a ship that was, I forget if it was a medical ship or some kind of, or an environmental ship. They were caught in a hurricane, talking about their adventure through the hurricane. We've got stories from 9/11. We've got stories. We've got a whole group from Pomperog Woods, where the average age there is 90. They've been telling their stories for about 3 years. And so we've got interesting stories about what kind of clothes they wore, or what their high school was like, what their experiences in the war, their experiences...
and that's
the music they like.
And it's called StoryChip.
StoryChip.
Okay, terrific.
Thank you.
Thanks. That's a great one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I was listening to an interview that Terry Gross did recently with someone who is the spouse, the wife of a man who's been deployed. Oh, I don't know how many times. Just what, 11 times? And he's in the military. And she was talking about what that is like and the adjustments that they have had to make with each other, and who's in charge when he comes home. What it's like for her as a single parent. And I'm listening to this, and I thought in advance of this show, I thought, why are we not in our military branches setting up top flight child care in the United States for the spouse at home and the children? This could be a model for the nation. It could change so much. We are putting so much money into military hardware, forgetting that these soldiers are coming home, who knows in what condition. And what about the spouses who are trying their best? They're certainly not making a fortune while their spouse is away in these theaters. So we should be able to do that. I guess that's an idea that I would love to see happen. I know that at military bases, certainly here in Connecticut, there are different kinds of assistance programs, but I mean top flight child care for the kids and for the families of people who are fighting in our wars. 203-776-WNPR is our number if you've got a great idea you want to suggest or something you've been involved in. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hi, Faye. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
A while back I was listening to NPR and there was a big story on car sharing and, you know, people, especially that live in the cities, that leave the car in one place, kind of like the there's a business that does it as well. But I live out in the country, and I work at a school, and I was thinking, how could I be involved in that kind of a car share thing so that, you know, I'm not just using my car for myself. So here I was thinking, I'm a school teacher, so I drive to work, and my car sits for 6-7 hours not being used. And there's probably people in the community where I work that could use a car that don't have one. So my idea was to try and figure out how to do a car share like that in a school environment or in some of these rural communities.
How would the car share work?
Well, for example, in France, they were doing this, and you know, the people would just in the same community would get together and say, "Okay, I'm not using my car on Tuesday, so if you need to go to the grocery store, you can take my car on Tuesday." Or, I'm using it Saturday but not Sunday, or let's all go to the grocery store together in my car so we can save, on gas and so we can save on emissions.
And so in terms of problem solving, we'd have to deal with insurance issues, right?
That's my biggest question on how they did that. But, you know, I work in sort of a less than affluent community, and I know that several of my kids' parents don't have cars. I'm like, well, here's my car just sitting all day. Let someone, but exactly how do I figure out the insurance issues and that kind of thing? But it just seems like...
Yeah, but you're floating this idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
maybe...
That's my idea.
Thank you so much. That's go ahead.
The caller that you had earlier that was talking about the, just getting sort of your car in line. On that same show that I was looking at, I wish I could remember the guy's name. He is an aviator, and I think it was on the TED Radio Hour, but they're in places like, I want to say, Dubai, and another place, they have these underground sort of systems, and you get in the little car, and it just automatically takes you, to the next station where you want to go to get out, and it's that same kind of thing that he was talking about. So, again, we don't have our own cars, but we can still have that privacy. You get in the car, and you program it to where you want to go, and it takes you automatically. And the other great thing about that is that people who are getting elderly and are in fear of losing their license, they still have a lot of mobility without, all of the difficulties, perhaps, of taking public transportation, let's say, if you're not great.
Okay. Well, Amy, thank you so much for being on the show.
Sure. Thanks so much for having me.
Really appreciate it.
Okay,
I wanted to tell you about Barbara Fredrickson, who has done Love 2.0, the book. We have about 30 seconds left, and she's redefined love from romance to connection with another. And it changes everything when you see it that way. She's doing a whole new psychology based on this. Research, unbelievable. That is a book worth seeing. Barbara Fredrickson, Love 2.0, research psychologist. Great ideas from you. We'll do this again. Thanks so much. As always, this show is about the richness of life. You can find the books, people, recipes, all the websites we've been talking about in this hour. Just go to programs at WNPR.org to search the Faith Middleton Show. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.